This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
6:11. While I was out, things got a little busy. Thanks to everybody at the White Eagle Golf Club. Had a nice time in our annual member guest situation, so that was fun.
How'd you do, by the way?
I did not win, by the way.
Okay.
My cousin, Kurt, came in again this year. We had a great time. And we played ourselves out of it very quickly, so we took the pressure off. Had a very bad opening day. And then played ourselves back into it, but couldn't catch up. I think we finished fourth. Fourth, probably.
That's very admirable. That's out of how many groups?
Four. No. No, on our flight, I don't know, 10, probably.
That's good.
It's not bad.
Yeah,
upper half.
Exactly. Hendrik Stenson. Mary's back from the road. How was northern Wisconsin?
The weather was not that great. It was, you know, we had
it's snowing, right? Isn't it winter in northern Wisconsin?
I tell you, I think we had 2 days of really good weather where we got out on the lake. Otherwise, you know, we had that torrential downpour. I don't know if you guys all heard about it from northern Wisconsin. We got 7 inches of rain on Monday night. Other areas got like 12 in Ashland, Wisconsin. So many of the lakes, their docks were actually underwater. Boats were washed away. It was horrendous.
I saw roads washed out.
So it was a hurricane in northern Wisconsin?
No.
You think we would have heard about it?
It was a torrential rainfall. It was crazy on Monday night. And the weirdest thing, they need a Tom Skilling up there desperately because nobody predicts weather properly up there. It's just a mess. You never know what you're going to get day by day.
Should ask Skilling about it because, you know, he was in Milwaukee for years.
I should. Well, this is not Milwaukee.
No, I know, I'm saying he does have a bit of a flavor of Wisconsin.
Yeah, this is by Duluth. I mean, we're way up there.
Well, the legend lives on from the Chippewa down from the big
Superior,
lake we call Gitche Gumee.
Gitche Gumee's there. It was kind of crazy, but the mosquitoes were out, that's for sure, and we had a great time.
How about you, Andre? What'd you do?
I worked pretty much all weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But
drawing the line on that working 7 days thing.
No, you know why? Because I'm going to be off next weekend because I'm going to be in Cleveland for the convention. So I took next weekend off and they said, can you work an extra day?
And you, of course, said yes.
I said no, but yes.
If anyone listening needs Andre to do some yard work or possibly run some errands for you, just call. Shouldn't necessarily want to do it, but you'll say yes to anybody.
I could say no.
Yeah, okay.
Watch.
No. Yeah, no, you can't. You can't. You really can't. You need someone to say no for you. You need a designated no in your life.
But you know what was cool? I saw my godkids last night, and I got him this 3D chalk. Have you heard about this?
I have heard about it, yeah.
Okay, this is awesome. And I was just happy that they're not even into Pokemon yet, because that's just insane. Mm-hmm. So they're drawing, and they put the glasses on, and they're like, this is so cool. The stars and the moon are floating. It's just so
the joy of children being goofballs.
After what the stories we cover and what we deal with, to see the kids getting excited about the sidewalk chalk was so cool.
Speaking of that, Abigail Grace and I spent some quality time together this weekend. And we took plastic domes and we smacked them together and made loud noises. And let me tell you, just another example of how advanced the child is.
Yeah, exactly.
At 7 months old. Dave, how was your time away from me?
Well, I missed you, Steve. But I managed to move forward, and we had a great time at the Blackhawks convention Friday and Saturday. And then
fabulous party for all.
Terrific. Yeah, it was great.
Which seminar did you do?
I had the Blue Liners.
Oh, yeah, the defenseman.
And I have to tell you that Duncan Keith was in a playful mood.
Really?
I guess would be the best way to sum it up.
Did he check you against the podium?
I think he tried a couple of times.
Was your seminar the session where he told the story about how he ran out of gas?
No, that was I believe in the What's Your Goal session. That was very funny.
How about that?
But we had Keith, we had Hammer, we had Soupy, and we had TVR.
That's a pretty good collection.
It was, and they were all very entertaining. It was
and
a
all
lot of
fan
fun.
Favorites.
Yes. Yes.
We'll get to Jake and Sandberg later. Sandberg had a rough weekend on huge boats.
On a yacht.
Around Lake
on a yacht, lovey.
Good morning, Paul Conrad.
Hello. How are you?
Doing fine. How was your weekend?
It was very nice. Very nice. Thank you. And yours?
Busy. Very,
good.
Very busy.
That's good to
family
hear.
In. Big golf tournament.
Nice.
Most importantly, Abigail Grace and I hanging out, making noise, banging plastic things together.
That's a lot of fun.
She showed me a lot of stuff that I didn't know how to do.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so sweet.
Yeah.
Special.
What was your special day like?
Well,
your special weekend?
What'd you do? See, you know, Larry and I go away. Larry Potash and I go away once a weekend every year, and we try to get to the square dance festivals, and we shook it around quite a bit. And so we left Friday, got back last night, and that man, he can square dance better than probably any TV newscaster in this market.
Well, that is a good, good skill to have.
Yeah,
you never know when that's going to be called into play.
Yeah.
Will there be video of that available?
Well, that's the thing. One of the requirements, because the way the competition has gone lately, they don't allow any videotaping.
Oh, boy.
Which, you know, it's ridiculous because I don't think it's the best thing for the sport. But it was fun.
Is there a chance that Larry will deny it even happen?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can pretty much count on it. He has a little bit of shame, I think, primarily because his wife makes fun of him.
Well, she needs to understand that you two have something special.
Right, listen, you got to do it. It's one weekend a year. It's not like we're doing it every weekend.
Right, that's exactly right. Yeah,
and he lets it all hang out, you know, because he comes.
He could have gone back. I mean, he could have gone back to his gambling. I mean,
he shows
remember,
up. With, yeah,
we all remember what a horrible gambler he was.
He had a rough stretch with the gambling and the drugs,
right,
and the prostitutes
and dressing like women.
Yeah. But he's come through, and you got to replace those bad things with good things.
Right.
And he should be celebrating it, to be honest with you.
Well, I'm glad everybody had a good time while I was out.
It was delightful, yeah.
Yeah. Now, I know you're just seconds away from doing the forecast.
Yeah.
Are we okay weather-wise?
Sure, yeah. No problems.
All right, thanks for the update.
Yeah, all right.
All right, that's my friend Paul Conrad.
I love you, and I always will.
That's Paul Conrad live. Channel 9 Weather Center. Something terribly, terribly wrong with him.
He's got a nice singing voice. Didn't know that.
At 6:18, we'll talk Cleveland coming up, and we'll go over some of the just terrible stretch of news that's gone on. And I want the superintendent of police to come on this show this week,
okay,
and tell me what the CPD officers have for their own safety.
That's it.
Are you getting enough protection?
Very, very
good
question.
Are you okay out on the street?
They're still into that in safety mode right now, so no officers are out on patrol alone.
Not enough.
They're all together.
Not enough. Got to know more. 6:18. More in a moment. 7:20 WGN.
Regardless of motive, the death of these three brave officers underscores the danger that police across the country confront every single day. And we as a nation have to be loud and clear that nothing justifies violence against law enforcement. Attacks on police are an attack on all of us and the rule of law that makes society possible.
6:23, what people have to remember is if a cop is standing in front of two people and one spits on him and the other reaches out to shake his hand, he is sworn to protect both of them equally. That's what 99% of police do. And it's police and leadership in government's job to weed out racists, get rid of them, treat them like the dirtballs that they are. It is a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of the police population. Arguably, the same percentage of the insurance adjuster population and the talk show host population and others. We don't do the math on those kind of cowards. Maybe we should. We'll get to that coming up and what we know about what happened at Baton Rouge. But at 6:23, I do want to preview Cleveland here for a second. We know that Rick Pearson and Pat Brady are there now, and we'll check in with Brady a little bit later on. Off and on this week, we'll hear from comedian, entertainer, and cat burglar, Mark DiCarlo, on his thoughts on Cleveland as well. But John DeCosta has prepared a song for your Cleveland visit. When you're ready, roll that.
How could a party in 1854, when started Lincoln there for his president, who set the liberal precedent by signing the doc, the proc, emancipation. And now they're floating and bloated in geoparty constipation. We read the tweeted, defeated Carson, Rubio, and Cruz. But nobody wants to talk about the elephant in the room. The Trumpster, the dumpster of speeches loaded full of smut. They would have been better off with Donald, last name Ensign Duck. Conventions of Republicans. This is Conventions of Republicans. They can't agree to disagree again. Watch and see, watch and see.
Maybe the best thing he's ever done. Unbelievable.
here's the
knockoff of Hamilton. He turns it into the RNC convention.
I was going to say, the brilliant mind. We sat in here, and it was during, obviously, Hamilton's big right now. We said, could you do something like that? Sure. He and his son, we have to give Christopher DeCosta.
Yeah, Christopher, exactly. Yeah. Christopher does a lot of
background vocals.
And does the music. Yeah.
So awesome.
Nicely done, John. All right, so you're going on Wednesday.
I'm going on Wednesday. Convention obviously starts tonight. Ro Khan is there. We're going to talk with him, I think, in the 9 o'clock hour. But, you know, you said, Scott Baio, you're not joking. I think some people laughed when you said that. The list of speakers, they're calling them part-time celebrities. Scott Baio, they include William Robertson, you know, of course, from Duck Dynasty.
Which one is he?
He is the Buck Commander, the CEO of Duck Commander.
Oh, he's the guy that runs the Duck Dynasty thing.
Willie Robertson. I think he's the guy with the long beard. But it's funny, when they sent his bio, they put a New York Times best-selling author, traveling speaker, father of five, and an avid outdoorsman.
Yeah, tremendous.
But then, of course, you know, Governor Rick Perry's going to be speaking. Marcus Luttrell, the Navy SEAL. They do have some. I think this is going to be a moving speech. I'm going to try and see this one on Wednesday night. Pat Smith is the mother of the Benghazi victim. Yeah. Sean Smith, of course, who was killed during the Benghazi attack. Of course, there's some politicalization to
politicization, that. Politicization, that's what you're looking for on a Monday morning? Yeah, to that as well. How about Antonio Sabato Jr.? From a soap operas.
From General Hospital. He's in Dancing with the Stars.
Wasn't he in, was he just soap operas, or was he in Baywatch, too?
Oh, he might have been in the new Baywatch.
Was he a younger guy?
Yeah. Bold and the Beautiful he was on, too.
I don't like guys with their shirts off. I'm funny that way.
They have a lot of state representatives as well. David Clark, the sheriff of Milwaukee County. They're going to have Scott Walker. I think that's Thursday night. Rather, Wednesday night is Scott Walker.
Melania Trump's talking tonight?
She's talking tonight. Rudy
Giuliani.
Will
there be a translation running?
I don't think there will be a translation.
The accent's a little thick. I have Rosetta Stone for Melania Trump just to make sure I can understand her.
Joni Ernst is speaking tonight, too. I think that's going to be a very nice... I think she's great. I mean, I like hearing her speak. I think she's going to be great. Each night, Steve, has a theme, though. Make America work again. Make America safe again. Tonight's Make America Safe Again. Tomorrow is Make America Work Again.
There's someone named Kimberlyn Brown listed as an actor. Does anybody know who that is?
Young and the Restless, Bold and the Beautiful.
What's with all the soap stars?
Yeah. A lot of soap people.
You got to get somebody who's willing to come.
Exactly. So
like Mike Pence.
Good point.
They don't have jobs anymore. There's no soaps.
There was another one here that struck me. Oh, yeah. Carrie Woolard, the general manager for Trump Winery. Gets a speaking spot at the convention.
No speakers from Trump University that I see. Scott Walker is tomorrow night, along with
Natalie Gulbis is speaking.
Yeah, yeah. That'll be good. Yeah. Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz are also tomorrow night. Trump's children are speaking each night as well. Eric the first night, Don Jr. the second night.
I'd like to hear his ex-wives. I'd like his ex-wives come up.
I don't think. But the big, of course, Bill Clinton's going to be introducing Hillary. Ivanka is going to be introducing Donald Trump on Thursday night.
His daughter.
Yes, yeah. Ivanka, well, his daughter. Works. Yeah, it's very nice. And she's a very good speaker, too, Ivanka Trump.
We'll play some of the tape from the 60 Minutes interview coming up. At one point, Leslie Stahl asked Trump about actually considering picking his daughter for VP. But the Mike Pence, and I've got some information on Mike Pence to share with you as well, but the Governor Pence and Donald Trump interview looked like the two of them had never met. I mean, there couldn't have been less chemistry in the room. It's the worst blind date ever.
It's bizarre. Ever since that announcement came over the weekend, the official announcement, because we all knew on Friday, but it's just bizarre. The chemistry, or lack thereof.
The lack of chemistry. Sandberg?
I just wanted to, two things. Antonio Sabato Jr., you probably remember him from the Calvin Klein ads where he wore the really tight, tiny underpants.
You know what's going to shock you? That's not what I remember him from. And what was the other thing?
You know how they did that movie of John McCain and Sarah Palin afterwards, like on how he got matched with her or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking forward to the Trump movie of his crew picking Pence and or whoever the other list was of people saying no, you know, that whole.
There's a very strong background story / rumor that Trump obviously denies, that 10 minutes after the pick was announced on Twitter by Trump, Trump called Elvis, what's his guy, Manafort, the guy that looks like Elvis, called him up and said, can I change my mind?
That's not surprising. Does that surprise you guys? Who do you think, okay, if there is the Trump Lifetime movie, who would play Trump?
Paul Manafort.
Rob Lowe. Fresh off of his role.
I guess, Scott Baio.
I think Travolta could, because he did that good in the O.J. Simpson. He did that weird.
They started
character.
The same puffy older guy body type. Now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know anything
just
about
put some
that.
Blonde hair.
It's at 6:30. Let's come back and we'll get your big story next on 720 WGN.
I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
More from John DeCosta's Dr. Kevin Most joins us. Courtesy of Northwestern Medicine Impact Every Day. Good morning, Doc.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. 97 Friday, too hot.
It is too hot.
Yeah, it's too hot. It's officially too hot on Friday. It's not a bitch. That's a fact. It's going to be too hot on Friday. All right, so this Pokemon Go thing.
Yeah.
Doc, you and I played Pokemon Go a lot. We get together. We do a little window shopping. Then we play Pokemon Go. But Pokemon Go should be a good thing because it gets kids outside and they're walking around and stuff. But now we're getting Pokemon Go injuries.
Yeah, how about it? And you're right. You know, physicians are pretty much split on Pokemon Go. A bunch of them are, hey, this is great. It's taking a smartphone that used to make kids sedentary, and now it's getting them up and getting them active. And the orthopedic docs and the emergency room docs are saying, yeah, but you know what? We're seeing a lot of fractured bones and injuries, and now we're really starting to get some serious injuries. If over the weekend, you know, California, two kids fell off a cliff just outside of San Diego.
Just not paying attention.
Yep.
Staring at their phone, looking at them, trying to get the monster. They literally walked off a cliff.
Yep. Girl in Pennsylvania walked into traffic, was hit by a car. You know, kids in Florida were close to someone's house, and it was the middle of the night. The owner thought they were burglars and went out and shot at them. I mean, so there's a balance we need to have here. And we have a lot of injuries from something as simple called distracted walking. We all do it just looking at our phones and texting and emailing and reading things on the phone. But you can imagine when a kid is absolutely mesmerized in this and is in a very urban area or a very rural area and falls off a cliff.
Or they're Pokemoning and driving.
Mayor, that's probably the worst thing now
because
we're starting to see injuries. There's actually a story in the news about a Marine who was driving, trying to capture some secret Pokemon thing and actually caused a major accident.
Is this a Marine that didn't know we're not actually fighting Pokemon right
now? Yeah, probably, yes.
Capturing a bad guy instead?
Yeah.
Well, look, from a parent's perspective, it's very simple. You know, you sit him down, you look him in the eye, and you say, this is what you can do, this is what you can't do. And this is what's happening around the country, and don't be an idiot.
Yeah, and you know how well that works. So
you say that's not foolproof?
Especially with the teenagers. The teenagers are going crazy over it.
But I'm telling you, if the ship has sailed so far that you can't sit down with your kid and say, don't wander into traffic and don't fall off a cliff, then what kind of relationship do you have with your kids?
Yeah, and you know what? It's even college-age kids, so it'll be very interesting this fall when everyone goes back to school, how this, whether it fades or whether it goes up on steroids.
Who's playing Pokemon Go in college?
A lot of people.
I'm going to
throw them. They have a ton of kids. They had a.
I thought this was like a 12-year-old.
They thought there was a riot actually in Milwaukee. I got a text. They said, "Oh, it must be a Black Lives Matter, or there's a whole bunch of people congregating at this particular square." It was in Milwaukee, and it was a Pokemon. It was hundreds and hundreds of college kids or students, and they were all. I don't even want to say it was a study group, but it was something. They all went out there and they were playing the Pokemon.
What happened to rampant drinking and sex in college? Now they're playing Pokemon.
I'm going to throw my son under the bus. He's been crazy about this game, and it's good and it's bad. He's out. Yesterday he was going to go frolfing. You know what that is?
No,
frisbee golf. Okay. He frolfs all the time with his friends, and he's like, "Oh yeah, we were looking for, you know, we were doing the Pokemon thing, and we frolfed while we were there because they were at a park."
Frolfing usually has drinking
and
involved.
No, not at a public park.
Is it
but
frolfing?
Frolfing.
Of course there's
frisbee
drinking.
Golf?
Frisbee golf. No,
that's
no, no.
It's cute how your mom.
Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah.
cute how mom Mary says, not my son.
I know this
the
one,
other
they
kids.
Don't drink at this
no,
place.
Of course
they
not.
Can't. But anyway,
no, of course not.
Anyway, they went searching for the Pokemon. The server went down. So they were home very quickly.
So they immediately came inside because there couldn't be anything else you could do outside on a beautiful summer day.
Yeah, and my kid's really active, but this is making him, he's all over the place with this.
Well, Doc, what do you do?
It's got to be common sense, to be honest with you, and you just have to look out for others, you know, especially if you're with a group of people doing it.
You need a Pokemon Go spotter so you don't walk off a cliff.
You do, but unfortunately it's a competition. They're both trying to get to the same thing. But I think we're only going to see more and more injuries from it. And, you know, the orthopedic doctors and, you know, like I said, orthopedic doctors, I think they invested in skateboards. They're probably investing in Pokemon. You know, this is going to be an increase in the emergency room visits. And we really have to be careful because there are going to be some sad stories that come out of this. So to parents, really try to push the safety portion of it and tell the kids to be careful.
More with Doc in a second. As augmented reality goes on, there are nerds right now who are on the verge of announcing whatever the next Pokemon Go thing is. And when they do, there'll be more of this, not less of this. Again, the activity part's good. The walking in traffic isn't good. But how many people get hurt walking every year? This is not a joke. Doc will come back and tell you that. And also tell you how you can go blind looking at your smartphone in the middle of the night. Remember we talked about this a week ago, transient blindness? We'll get the medical explanation of it coming up in a second. At 647, Dr. Mo, sponsored as always by Northwestern Medicine Impact Every Day. Dr. Kevin Mo, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine Impact Every Day. We're talking about hurting yourself with your smartphone and walking. It would be really funny if there wasn't a lot of truth to it. All right, how many people get hurt walking every year?
Well, the number is 15,000, but that's the number that we can go to an emergency room record and pull that information out. So a lot of people think it's a multiple of that. You know, that's someone that went to actually seek medical advice and from an emergency room. So we can't capture it in the primary care offices. So many people think it's 10 times that. So 150,000 people are injured because of distracted walking.
Now, we see it in the city all the time here on Michigan Avenue in the beautiful Allstate Showcase Studio where people are walking across the street texting. Most of these injuries walking are not because somebody gets hurt walking and they're just walking. They're not paying attention. I mean, that's it. It's all this distracted walking you're referring to, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They walk off a curb and sprain their ankle or break their ankle. They trip and then they fall. They get an abrasion on their leg. They get an abrasion, a lot of facial abrasions, actually, because people don't put their hands out in time because they don't see the fall coming and they actually face plant. So, yeah, emergency rooms are seeing a lot more of it.
Now, sprained ankles, broken bones, facial fractures, lacerations, abrasions, contusions, all from Pokemon Go. However, getting up in the middle of the night and looking at your cell phone, you know, you got to get, oh, I got to pee, get up to pee. Oh, I wonder if anybody texted me. And you start looking at your cell phone in the middle of the night. Bad idea. Why?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We haven't done a lot of segments on eye health, but if everybody just thinks about your eye, it's absolutely amazing. You know, the pupil increases in size, decreases in size based on the amount of light that we get. That information then is pushed back in the back of our eye into the retina, and the retina takes that information, transforms it into electricity, sends it to our brain so that we can see. Pretty cool, right?
And of course, they're like individual computers in both eyes.
Exactly. It allows us to see on a really bright, sunny, snowy day, and it also allows us to see at night if we want to look at a star. Well, the eye takes a little time to change from one extreme to the other.
Sure.
And what they've seen with this transient smartphone blindness is people who lie in bed and they're lying on their side. So one eye is actually looking at the phone and the other eye is kind of in the pillow. So it's not seeing any light. And what happens then is they get up and they can't see out of that eye that's lit, that was lit before. So the one that was looking at the phone, now they can't see at all. And they're thinking, oh, my gosh, I can only see out of this eye. Yeah, because that eye has been prepared. The eye is ready for seeing in dark. So it's kind of amazing. The ophthalmologists that are seeing this now, they have to convince people you don't need a CAT scan. You don't have a detached retina that's detaching
right,
and attaching.
You don't have a brain tumor. You don't have this. You don't have that.
Exactly. Yep.
All right, but here's the thing, because I believe I'm right about this, but tell me if I'm wrong. This is no different than somebody turns on the light in the bathroom and suddenly you go, turn the light off, I'm asleep. You stare at your phone from a foot or two away after having your eyes closed for hours. That can't be good for you.
It's not. You know, that's a shock.
You're flooding it with light, right?
Exactly. It's a shock to the eye. The eye has been set and is ready for darkness. So when it's ready for dark, that pupil is as wide as it can get. You know, you always hear them on the TV when they're talking about filming at night, how wide they have to open the iris of those lenses. Same with our body. So now the iris is as open as it possibly can get because it's used to seeing in dark, and then all of a sudden a bright light hits it. So it's a big shock, clamps down, and you have a very difficult time seeing.
Doc, I have another cell phone question for you, but and this might sound crazy, but I have a friend who literally thinks she's getting arthritis from using her cell phone too much. She said, oh, I'm getting a crampings in my hand. I think it's from using my
phone.
Is that, can that happen?
Absolutely. It happens with people who text a lot, because if you think about it, the position that your hand is in while you're texting, so a lot of people that do it with two thumbs are going to get arthritis, essentially, which is just, arthritis is just a fancy word for inflammation of a joint that's being used in a way that is overuse. So very common, extremely common, actually. You know, they used to call it BlackBerry thumb. So there was a lot of people that were getting that and continue to.
I have the Samsung 7 Edge, bigger screen, iPhone 6 Plus, bigger screen. You're doing that with one hand where you're stretching out your thumb as you hold it in an awkward position. You know, your thumb's sore. Well, guess why? Because your thumb's not supposed to work that way.
Exactly.
All right, now one more before we get to Dave in sports, because Dave has a sports question, which made me laugh when he asked it off the air. Facebook, we saw a study, I don't know, a year or two ago, that the people were getting depressed from Facebook. Facebook depression. So that kicked off a study. What happened in the study?
Yeah, and this is very serious. This is something that parents really need to understand. I mean, there's actually a medical term called Facebook depression. And that's what happens when kids, you know, have this high presence on social networks, spending a great deal of time, and then they start to feel inadequate. They start to feel that they're not accepted. They start to have more peer pressure. And a lot of bad things have happened because of it. Suicides have happened because of it. Social isolation has happened because of it. So it's something that we really need to look at. What they did at University of Birmingham in the UK is they asked parents, okay, tell me about your children that use these and tell me what you think about their social skills and what's gone on. And what they've been looking at is this moral development decrease in children in the UK. And their parents are listing anger and hostility as huge negative traits that they find after children use their cell phone, use their smartphone, and also arrogance and bad judgment. So those are the moral traits that parents are starting to see their children develop, and psychologists are. So now it's a matter of the next part of that study is going to be the spectrum of how much time do you spend on it. Is this happen even if you spend a small amount of time on it or a large amount of time? And we don't even have a generation yet that we can look at to say that's what's occurring.
Yeah, and I know a ton of well-meaning adults with kids who are either preteens or teenagers who go, well, I don't let them watch a lot of TV. They just look at Facebook on their phone. That's another screen.
Yep.
If they're spending hours and hours on Facebook or hours and hours on Twitter or hours and hours on whatever, they're staring at another screen. It's no better.
And you have to remember, kids at that age are very rough on each other. So you got to be careful and you have to be aware of what's going on. So, you know, I tell parents, monitor the sites that their children are on. If they're on Facebook, make sure that you friend them and watch for those signs, because nothing worse than saying, gosh, I had this bad thing happen to my child. And I saw it occurring. I saw it over the past 4 months.
And limit the amount of time they can do it.
Absolutely.
With consequences.
Yep.
All right, let's go live to Dave in sports. Dave, you have a sports question involving medicine and a terrible condition. And this involves who?
And this involves Cubs pitcher Jason Hamill.
Who's got the cramps?
He had a cramp in his right hand his last start.
Yes.
So the team doctor told him, Doc, to eat potato chips.
How many?
Sea salt and vinegar potato chips.
There you go.
And he went out on Saturday and he beat the Texas Rangers.
That's great.
Is this nonsense?
Is the team doctor a cardiologist as well?
I'm not sure about it. Or a dietitian.
Is this a legitimate treatment? Look, I remember salt tablets from playing football.
Yep.
But what about the potassium piece?
Yeah. So, and actually we did. We got away from salt tablets. But really, you know, the sodium-potassium electrolyte balance that we need, especially in, like you said, this weekend when it's 97 degrees, If you don't have those, if you decrease the potassium, you are going to get those muscle cramps. So getting sodium potassium back into your system, sure, you can do it with sea salt potato chips. You can also do it with Gatorade. So, right. I mean, just use the right balance here and let's send the right message. I don't want, potato chip companies to start being the Gatorade of health teams or of sports teams.
I remember I'm Nolan Ryan, and I eat Pringles before we start.
That's it. A few years ago, Carlos Zambrano was having that problem, and they had him eating bananas. Which yep. I think most people would figure for potassium that makes sense, but I'd never heard this, but it worked.
It does. It works. And, you know, even the potassium in bananas, you know, it's great to do that. It's kind of healthy for you, but you got to eat a whole bunch of bananas to get your total daily need of potassium. So there's other balances and there's other places in food that you're going to find it as well.
Isn't this another way to get some sort of grease on the baseball?
You know, yeah, very good point.
Right?
That's it.
Right? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Doc, great stuff. Thank you for that. Please put your smartphone down.
Yep, let me say one thing, too, because my favorite sister's birthday is today, so I'd like to say happy birthday to Denise, and I know how much you like her, and she's my favorite sister, so it's her birthday.
Can I tell you?
She's my only sister.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, she's my favorite most, other than your mom.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, I don't think so. Thank you, Doc.
Take care, you guys. Talk to you soon.
See you, Doc.
Right. The Steve Cochran Show.
They are on the run. And I believe what we're seeing are the desperate actions of an entity that sees the noose closing around it.
Well, with all due respect, sir, I'm not sure that it looks that way to the public that ISIS is on the run. In just the last few weeks, we have
seen a
series of ISIS-inspired attacks. 49 killed in Orlando, 45 killed in Istanbul at the airport, more than 200 killed in Baghdad, 84 in Nice. This is just the last 5 weeks. I don't think ISIS is on the run.
Well,
Jason, they might be expanding.
Jake, it depends on where you mean ISIS.
Such a bad argument to make. You're coming off of all of those things that were mentioned, and then Nice last week. ISIS is on the run. Look, even if it's true, you can't make that argument. That was Secretary of State John Kerry on with Jake Tapper on CNN at 7:14. Ivan Eland is here. Ivan is an American defense analyst and author and senior fellow, director of the Center of Peace and Liberty at the Independent Institute. You can follow him on Twitter. I just had it. Now I lost it. Ivan_Eland, E-L-A-N-D. Good morning, Ivan. How are you?
How are you? How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Why don't we start with the Secretary of State's statement that ISIS is on the run. In context, do you buy it?
Well, I think ISIS is on the run on the ground to some extent. They lost 50% of Iraq and 20% of Syria. But the problem is this group will revert back. And I think any terrorist analyst would probably tell you that this was the path that they would take. They're morphing into more of a terrorist organization and less of a regular army that's taking territory in those countries, because they are getting beaten on the ground. But the problem with this insurgency, if you will, is it's morphed. When they started bombing ISIS, of course, they decided that they would hit back at Western targets. And of course, France is much closer than the U.S. Now, we have had attacks in the U.S., as you just mentioned. The Orlando attack was inspired, and this Nice attack looks like it might be inspired. And I think the difference between a directed attack by the group, a directed attack was something we saw on 9/11 versus an inspired attack, is that these guys get radicalized by the ISIS propaganda. They tend to be a lot less professional and usually kill less people, although we've had a significant amount of people killed recently. As opposed to the, with these inspired attacks, which one of the scariest attacks I think we've had in recent memory is this truck attack, because you didn't really need any sophisticated anything.
It's a new level of horror, because if you are willing to drive an 18-wheel tractor trailer at 20 or 25 miles an hour, running over human beings. Looking at it while it's happening. This isn't blowing yourself up where it's over in a second. This is you murdering people for a course of a mile with your truck and experiencing the entire thing. That's a new level of crazy.
Yeah, I think it is. And I always thought that, you know, when they hit, certainly hitting symbolic targets is what these groups tend to do. But if you went to some shopping mall or, in this case, drove a regular truck down a promenade, that would be a lot scarier to people. The purpose of terrorism is to scare a lot of people without wasting too many resources, because these guys, you know, compared to nation states, they don't have a lot of resources, but they're being very, very effective. And now ISIS is, of course, inspiring people to do these things. And also, I think ISIS ideology is now providing a crutch for either mentally ill people or people with just a lot of issues, you know, that are become deranged. It provides them an excuse for doing heinous things that they dress up as, you know, some jihadist mission or something. So I think, you know, the problem is definitely, now I don't think it's contained just by beating them on the ground.
More with Ivan Eland in just a second. We've got to get a traffic update first. Mary's back with that on 720 WGN. Ivan Eland is an expert on bad guys, and good to have him as a resource for us. Andrea, say hello.
Ivan, hi. Good morning. I'm fascinated by your description of the directed attack or an inspired attack, because now it seems, as you had said, somebody who's mentally ill or maybe in a bad place, they can go online and see ISIS and do some sort of an act of terror like Nice or Orlando, and then fall under the guise of, oh, I was inspired by ISIS. So my question to you is there any way to stop or prevent an inspired attack?
Oh, it might help if I put it back on the air. Re-answer that. Ivan, we lost in the beginning. Start over for us.
Well, I think particularly in the Nice case, it's very hard to stop these things simply because, you know, you can do it with a truck or, you know, he could have done it with a minivan. He wouldn't have killed quite as many people probably, but he would still have killed a lot of people. And also, he was apparently radicalized very quickly. He didn't even go to, you know, the mosque, the local mosque. And the guy in Orlando, there's some evidence that he was going to gay clubs and drinking and that sort of thing. So whether these guys really believe the ideology, I think, you know, in their own minds, this justifies what they're doing. But, of course, in the public's mind, people still think they're, you know, bad or crazy or whatever. But in their own minds, this is a step above of just randomly killing people. They have some cause that they can attribute it to.
Before we run out of time here, Turkey, the attempted coup on Friday night kind of came out of nowhere. There have been consistent stories and discussions that this may have been quietly backed by us with the problems that we've had with Turkish leadership, one of our strongest allies. Any credence to that rumor that you can tell? And because one of the coup leaders, at least in spirit, is here in America, is there going to be an extradition?
Well, it's a dispute whether the guy in Pennsylvania actually had any role in this or whether Erdogan is just trying to wrap up all his opposition, you know, by one stroke after this coup. He may be trying to take advantage of it. And in fact, some people have even said, did he orchestrate it? Because it certainly helps him politically. He had a lot of problems with about half of Turkish society. His popularity had declined, and his own actions in Syria of allowing ISIS fighters and militants to go through that country. He also revved up the Kurdish insurgency that he has because he wanted to do better in the election. His political fortunes haven't been that great lately, so I think he definitely benefits from this coup. Whether he actually helped engineer it himself, I don't know. That's kind of conspiracy theory. But I think also they're going to have to prove that this guy in Pennsylvania had anything to do with it, because he has an incentive to use the failed coup to get rid of this guy, or at least get him back to Turkey where he can get rid of him. And so I think we have to these things play out over time. We'll more information will be coming out about this. And I think I'm not saying it was engineered, and I'm not saying the guy in Pennsylvania had anything to do with it either. But we certainly what we do know now is that Erdogan is taking advantage of it to repress his own opposition there, which has become stronger recently.
It's a Turkish wag the dog. We're just going to find the Turkish
right.
Robert De Niro
right.
and Dustin Hoffman and Billy Bob Thornton.
Well, politicians do take advantage of things to unify their publics. Sometimes it's external aggression, and sometimes it's you know, there's bad guys among us that we need to unite against. And, of course, that helps the politician involved.
Ivan Eland at the Independent Institute. Follow him on Twitter at Ivan, I-V-A-N underscore Eland, E-L-A-N-D, or just Google Ivan Eland for everything that he's doing. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
722, back with the end of at least one of our national nightmares. Deflategate.
Oh, yeah.
Is over.
Thank God.
Lester Munson joins us in a moment on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
I didn't, you know, have any, you know, I didn't alter the ball in any way. I've always played within the rules. I would never do anything to break the rules. You know, I believe in fair play and I respect the league and, you know, everything that they're doing to try to create a very competitive playing field for all the NFL teams. Tell them I'm okay. You know, it's, you know, things are going to be fine. This isn't ISIS. This isn't, you know, no one's dying. But, you know, we'll get through this.
727. That's Anna DeVlantis' secret friend, Tom Brady. Tom Brady and Lester Munson joins us now to talk about the end of Deflategate once and for all, along with the incredible writing Lester Munson has done forever and ever and being the number one go-to legal expert in sports. He also does even more important work on the board at the Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation. They have a location here in Chicago at North Dearborn, and they're making miracles happen every day. Good morning, Lester. How are you?
I'm doing well, Steve. Thank you.
So this national nightmare has come to a close as we look at camps opening next week. Who decided not to push the Supreme Court issue?
Apparently, Steve, it was Tom Brady himself. The National Football League Players Union had hired Ted Olson, one of the all-time great Supreme Court lawyers.
Right.
He is to the legal profession what Brady is to professional football. They were all set to go to the United States Supreme Court. In fact, they had rehearsed some of the arguments in the Court of Appeals in the Second Circuit in New York City. I thought it was just a matter of time before they would file in the Supreme Court. Everybody who has been watching this case thought the same thing. And then suddenly, without any warning, unexpectedly, Brady decides that he has had enough. He wants to go back to playing football. He's tired of courthouses. I think he's tired of lawyers. He's tired of judges. And so he made this decision. And now the union is considering the idea that it would pursue the case as a union. That's a highly dubious venture by the union, but that is what they are now considering at the union headquarters in Washington, D.C.
So do they need to go through the motions just to say they did and it'll fizzle out when it does?
That probably is exactly what will happen. They cannot now completely abandon the case after all of the righteous indignation and all of the attacks on Commissioner Roger Goodell and all of the suggestions that Goodell was completely wrong in everything that he did. It would be hard for the union just to walk away. So they and they've hired this high-powered lawyer who is ready to file the petition in the United States Supreme Court. The work is just about all done. You would think they would want to pursue that investment, if nothing else. And then I think you're right. Without Brady in the case loses legal essentials that you must have in any litigation. There's no client anymore with Brady out. There's no real adversarial issue anymore. Lawyers talk about this kind of thing all the time. And the Supreme Court is going to be a lot less interested if they don't have Tom Brady as part of the case. So, yeah, I think they'll go through the motions. It'll be a perfunctory kind of filing, and then the Supreme Court will refuse to take the case, and that will finally be the end of Deflategate.
Lester, there's no way that the league takes a magnanimous approach and Roger Goodell says, you know, we've all been through too much of this. I'm going to knock a game or two off this suspension and let's just move forward. That can't happen, right?
I don't think so. I have spent considerable time, not with the commissioner, but with the lawyers on his staff and with one of the outside lawyers, and they feel that it was the union and Brady who were completely wrong in all of this. They feel that they are defending their commissioner and his integrity and the provisions of the union agreement. They are just as righteous about it as Brady was, and only the commissioner personally himself could come back now and say, okay, I'm going to reduce it to two games or to one game. Would Roger Goodell do that? That's within the realm of possibility, but he might have a mutiny on his staff if he were to do that. This is like, you know, it's a realm of forgiveness that we rarely see, and I don't expect that to happen.
Great stuff as always, Lester, and congratulations as always to you and to everybody on that amazing team at Hazelden Betty Ford. Keep up the great work there, and thank you for the update. We'll now exhale.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, take care. All right. It's 7:32. Let's come back with the big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
I would like to introduce a man who I truly believe will be outstanding in every way and will be the next vice president of the United States, Governor Mike Pence. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Gosh, he sounds excited.
I thank Donald Trump for the confidence you've placed in us. And I accept your invitation to run and serve as Vice President of the United States of America.
Shonda Rhimes called and said, we're not putting this crap on Scandal. I don't care if it is true. Pat Brady in just a moment, live from Cleveland. Before we get to that, shocking results in the British Open picks. The British Open picks, final results are in. Dave, remind me during your sports at 8:10, this should be your lead. But I will bring you the shocking results.
I can't wait.
Tomorrow on this show, we've been trying to get these guys on for a long time, and I just got some good news. Libertarian candidates, running mates, Governors Johnson and Weld will be live in studio tomorrow.
Excellent. All right, so, finally.
For all of you who have been saying, Steve, put the Libertarians on. Steve, aren't coming out talking about the Libertarians. They have finally agreed to be on. They're actually going to be here in studio. So that'll be good for everybody that goes, look, I hate both of them, Steve. Who do I vote for? Well, we'll give you a look at them tomorrow. All right, live in Cleveland now. Witness to the odd couple up close. It's Pat Brady. Good morning, Pat. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Hey, great grab getting Governor Johnson and Bill Weld on. I haven't seen them anywhere.
No, they really haven't done a lot of media, which is one of the questions I'm going to ask them. Why aren't you out there every day? But anyway, so you and Rick Pearson have arrived safely in Cleveland. Tell us about the security that Andrea Darlos and Anna DeVlantis will face later this week.
It's tight. We were over last night at the kickoff event, and there's a big perimeter, a lot of police presence. But I think well done. There weren't any huge lines. But it's clear there's a huge police presence.
Okay. And did any of the police presence at this point figured out a way to keep Trump and Pence out of the arena?
I think a few of them might want to. But unfortunately, given what the Rules Committee did at the RNC Thursday and Friday, Trump's going to be the nominee barring some catastrophic event. So they will be here, and I'll be sitting down on the floor there.
Explain, as a Kasich delegate, what that means for you. You still get to vote for your guy, Kasich?
Yeah, I will still be voting for John Kasich, and that's what I do. Now, I don't know exactly how they're going to do it. You know, historically, they just say the great state of Illinois casts its 69 votes for whomever. There's going to be some kind of roll call vote where the people that are actually not supporting Donald Trump, the people like me that are voting for Kasich, their votes will be tallied. But I'm not sure. I'm not confident that's going to happen because they pretty much tried to keep us quiet and away from things. So I doubt that we're going to get any recognition.
And in the Rules Committee, did it come close to a decision on freeing delegates, or it was never really a possibility?
It wasn't close. The motion was defeated soundly, which to me is disappointing because I do believe there are a lot of people, not just Republicans, but Democrats, that are completely conflicted with their choices this year.
Pat, I have to ask you.
Well, less than 40% approval for both candidates.
Less than 40.
Less than 40% approval for both candidates means, I'm going to go way out on a limb, more than 60% disapprove of both candidates. Amongst that 60% is certainly going to be some of the delegates who are previously committed who would like to be free.
Yeah, you know, it didn't happen, and I, as my much as I'm disappointed, it doesn't do any good to complain about it. We got to look forward. I did see on a billboard on the way over that Jesus is running.
I know that there is.
I saw a billboard slamming the quote liberal media as people were flying into town. I saw that on social media. Pat, I got to ask, what is the, and this is not a typical reporter question, but and I'll tell you why I'm asking it. I know it's early, but what's the mood like right now? Okay, because this is a convention. It's supposed to be jovial and around the, you know, everyone supports the candidate, but Trump is so polarizing. What is the mood there? Is it kind of one of giving up or what?
No, the mood's pretty good. I have to say the people that are here are people that are Trump supporters, so they're excited about their nominee. There are a lot of people that are here that are conflicted on it but have kind of resigned themselves to the fact that he's the nominee. And then there's the third bucket of people kind of like me that just aren't going to vote for him, but doesn't mean I don't support the Republican Party, and I think it's important that we stay engaged in that. But the mood's pretty good. It's the reality is from this thing, it's a big party.
Mm-hmm.
There's some work that's been done, but most of it's just people getting together and going to events and then going to the convention.
And then the Illinois delegation did a meet and greet last night. They were welcoming people as they were coming in.
Yeah, they do that. You walk in the hotel, there's a meet and greet. Then there's a breakfast every morning, which they're doing right now. Congressman Davis is speaking today. I think Bob Dole might be. But you get to see the local Illinois leadership, which is nice. And a lot of it's just seeing people you haven't seen necessarily in 4 years and reconnecting and committing to getting people elected.
So what is your day now before Melania and Scott Baio and Yakov Smirnoff speak tonight?
No,
what is your day?
Antonio Sabato Jr., yeah.
Is there a Trump speaking every night?
Yeah. You got to spread your Trumps out.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. There are a series of events to go to and meetings with, like, there's Governor Kasich's doing an event with the Illinois delegation this afternoon. I'm going to go to that. Because a lot of the congressional delegation will be there, and I want to see Governor Kasich, so we'll do that. But that's pretty much what people are doing. There's all kinds of different events. A lot of corporate presence here, a lot less than there was last time because a lot of the corporate people pulled out because Trump's a nominee. But that's pretty much what the day is, and then the convention starts around 4:30.
Did you see the 60 Minutes interview with Trump and Mike Pence?
I did not.
Okay, you're going to want to pull that up on video. You're going to want to go ahead and take a look at that today. Because it looks like the two of them never met, which certainly.
Well, did you see his announcement? He spoke for 28 minutes, introduced Pence, and walked away. It was damn. I've never seen anything like that. You're supposed to be a unity ticket.
Leslie Stahl asked him last night. I haven't heard anybody else do this. Asked him last, and I'd certainly do it if he'd ever have the guts to show up on his show. Again, I want to get Trump and Mike Madigan on the same thing. It's a time saver for me. but I asked him if he wanted to be president. And you tell me, you go back and watch that, you tell me if he answers the question.
Well, you've been saying that all along.
Oh, yeah. He got sucked into the vortex of his own hair. All right, buddy. We'll check with you later.
All right. Thanks, guys. See ya.
Pat_Brady is how you follow him on social media. We'll come back. We'll play some of that 60-minute sound next on 720 WGN. Last night on 60 Minutes, and I got to say, they didn't promote this very well because I fell on it by accident. Governor Pence was on with Donald Trump, America's new hot couple. Trump and Pence sat down with Leslie Stahl, and to me, they look like they'd never met. So here's Trump and Pence on their chemistry, or lack thereof.
You don't really know each other that well. You're, at least I've read, a very low-key, very religious. You're a brash New Yorker.
Religious.
Religious?
Religious, yeah. Religious. Hey, I won the evangelicals. The evangelicals,
but that doesn't mean
you know, nobody
religious.
Thought, well, I think it means a lot. I don't think they think I'm perfect, and they would get up and they say, you know, he's not perfect, but
they point to
like
the divorce as.
I won states with the evangelicals that nobody thought I'd even come close to, and
that's
I won.
That's true. So you didn't need him for the evangelicals?
I think it helps, but I don't think I needed him, no, because I won with the evangelicals.
But I think we have more in common.
Yeah, tell me what you think you have in
common.
Might
be immediately obvious.
Beside issues, values, and things like that.
I think we will have very, very good chemistry. I feel that.
The interesting thing as the interview develops is Trump doesn't let Pence talk and answers for Pence or then approves Pence's answers. But anyway, here's Pence on if he would challenge Trump on his negativity as VP. Roll it.
You're the vice president. Your office is, I assume, down the hall. And you go in and you say, you know, you shouldn't be saying name calling. Would you do that? Would you go in and say, you crossed the line. I think you should apologize. Look. Would you do something like that?
Look,
he's laughing.
It's probably it's
okay.
It's probably obvious to people that our styles are different, but I promise you, our vision is exactly the same.
But would you?
And let me be clear.
Will you answer that? Would you go in?
Well, one of the things I found out about this man is he appreciates candor.
So you would go in?
I'd like him to if he thinks I was doing something
wrong. Would you listen to him if he said you crossed the line?
Absolutely. I might not apologize. You know, you said apologize. But
I did say apologize.
But I might not do that. But I would absolutely want him to come in. If he thinks I'm doing something wrong, Mike, I would want him to come in and say, really, you get it. And that's okay. I accept that from my consultants and my people. And if Mike came in and told me, you know, I think you should do this or that,
back
I would listen
that.
And very likely listen to him.
Very likely listen to him. Does he know he's his running mate?
Trump, by the way, supposedly said shortly after picking Mike Pence, hey, can we get a do-over? Can we get somebody else? That's a very hot story. Here's Leslie Stahl on whether or not he actually talked about picking his daughter Ivanka. Apparently the only person he really listens to. Here's that.
My family's going to speak. And
some
I think
people
that's
say your daughter would be your best surrogate. Excuse me, Mr. Pence.
I've heard it many times. I have to
I
tell.
Agree.
I have. Why don't we run Ivanka as your vice president? I said, I don't know. Yeah, but she's a very talented person. And I actually have heard that many times before, but Mike is an insult. But I think the convention's going to be terrific. But with that being said, I don't want to reinvent the wheel. I want it to be knowledge. I want people to learn from it. I want people to hear our views. To me, that's much more important than entertainment. But I think it's going to be a very entertaining period of time.
He actually brought it up. He brought up Ivanka and basically said, oh, we got Mike.
I'm sorry, was Pence the one who said, I agree?
Yeah, no, he
okay.
did. Absolutely.
Just wanted to make that clear.
So I talked to several people who know Indiana politics well. Here's what they said about Mike Pence. Great guy, very personable, very friendly, very honest man, hardworking, understands Washington, more experienced than, say, Dan Quayle, the last pretty famous Indiana politician. Cons? Can't manage people well, wanted to get back to D.C. Unlikely it'll help Trump much, but will help himself out a lot by putting himself in the national spotlight, especially considering the fact that he had very little chance of recapturing the governor's seat in his home state of Indiana because everything he inherited from Mitch Daniels, he kind of peed away. Screwed up the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, was no Mitch Daniels on any level for the people of Indiana. This, again, coming from people in Indiana. Folks close to him say that they were not clear he wanted to stay in Indiana at all, and he was ready to jump at this. He's also known, their words, not mine, as a bit of a goof, a bit self-righteous, very Christian conservative, pushes it too hard in this day and age, and again inherited the state that was running like a fine-tuned machine by the guy that left for Purdue. Who's going to be the new governor of Indiana? Susan Brooks seems to be the person that everybody wants. Eric Holcomb, the lieutenant governor, who's appeared on the show, is a fine person, but not quite ready for that addition to primetime yet. And with Evan Bayh now running for Senate, things are a little crazy in Indiana. So there's the background there. Dean Richards on show business coming up. How'd the new Ghostbusters movie do? That and other stuff. 10 minutes away or less. We'll get to the news next on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me, kiss me good.
8:15, Dean Richards live at Channel 9. Good morning.
Look who's back.
How are you, buddy?
Doing very well. How is you?
I is fine. Had a delightful weekend. A little Abigail Grace and I banged plastic things together and made noises. And then we both drooled.
That's nice.
And then I couldn't get anyone to change my diaper.
That's nice when you can bond with your granddaughter like that over...
And then
incontinence.
And banging plastic things together. You know, I played in a big golf tournament out at the beautiful White Eagle Golf Club. Thanks to everybody out there.
Nice.
And then Saturday night, I had an opportunity to be a part of a charitable function that, you know, it's personal to me. It's one of those that's, because I do a lot of this stuff, and they're all worthy causes, and they're all great, and I'm happy to be involved with all of them. But a young man named Chad Cook died suddenly of a massive heart failure at the age of 20 a few years ago. just a couple of years ago, and his family, as part of his legacy and what he wanted to do foundationally, held a fundraiser on Saturday night to keep this foundation going.
Oh, that's nice.
For their son. And his girlfriend was there, and family members were there. And by the way, the woman that put together, put the whole thing together, Jackie B, just nailed it. Putting it together, she just did a great job. So anyway, thanks to everybody involved. And if you Google Chad Cook, C-O-O-K-E, or the Chad Effect Foundation, I hope you'll help. One of the main things they do is try to raise money so that kids who can't afford to go to sports camps and get some of the summer things that other kids might be afforded, they help you know, scholarship kids into those. That's just nice. One of the things.
That's
so
nice.
So yeah, busy weekend, but a good weekend.
I feel like a slouch now.
Well, you just laid around?
I was hanging out with sleazy showbiz types. Nothing worthwhile, you know, nothing like nice like you did.
Were you in L.A.?
I was in L.A. I saw the new Star Trek movie, and that's not a review, of course, but I liked it.
Okay. I like this new system you have.
Yeah.
Where you don't review them while you review them.
No, I'm not reviewing them. I'm just saying that I left the theater with a smile on my face.
All right.
Could have been a variety of reasons for that.
Uh-huh. It's dark in there.
Especially good Fanta at the theater I was at. I'm enjoying the Fanta. You know, most of the theaters now have the Fanta.
Fanta, I don't remember Fanta. I don't know that I had Fanta.
Oh, yeah, grape and grape. Orange.
Oh, delicious.
I guess I had the grape Fanta.
It's my favorite orange pop.
Mm-hmm.
Fanta. What kind of chemicals are in the grape Fanta?
I don't care.
Paint thinner?
I don't care. I don't care. It's delicious.
You know what I have every night? I think I mentioned this, a grape popsicle.
Really?
Yeah, the Outshine fruit bars.
Oh, I like that.
Oh, they're great.
Actual fruit?
Yeah, uh-huh. Made from actual fruit.
Actual fruit.
You should sell the grapes they kill to make those.
I used to love a good root beer popsicle.
Now, root beer bloats me.
What happened to you? It used to be chocolate peanut butter.
I used to be a man.
Chocolate. Now you like the grape popsicle. That's made with real fruit and stuff.
That is the Hall of Fame phrase.
Root beer bloats me. Yeah, I don't think bloats is actually a verb, is it? Here's what's coming up. Taylor Swift with a problem with the Kardashians or not. Bono, I'm telling you, Bono in France, there's some sort of tie there that's pretty scary. A new Han Solo, Pitbull on the WGN Walk of Fame. This is a surprise to all of us.
I didn't know he worked there.
Celebrities at the convention tonight, and the new Star Trek cast was interviewed by Dean this weekend. All coming up.
You can travel Chicago. You'll be calling his name. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 9720.
So I don't understand this, Dean, is because, you know, I lost sleep over this. Is Taylor Swift fighting with Kim Kardashian?
It seems like that's what's happening. It's we've actually.
Why can't they get along?
We've got researchers trying to dissect this whole thing. When Kanye West released his song called "Famous," he had a line in there saying about Kanye about Taylor Swift.
Is this the one where he's naked in bed with everybody?
Yeah, I think that was the
video.
I believe that is the one. But yep. The line in the song was, "I feel like me and Taylor might still have sex. I made that be famous." So he said
he gives delusional a bad name, doesn't he?
He said that he had spoken with Taylor Swift and she approved all of that. So Kim Kardashian last night releases a recording, apparently a recording that was made without Taylor Swift's knowledge. The interchange between Kanye West and Taylor Swift on this. And you hear them talking back and forth, and Taylor Swift is talking about, you know, worrying that, you know, that she's involved in the song, worrying about overexposure, you know, her name being used too much. Kanye West says the lyric would be good exposure. She sort of gives the blessing on this. And then this tape is released, to which Taylor Swift released it was an Instagram in which she said, "Where's the video of Kanye telling me he was going to call me a bee in the song? It doesn't exist because it never happened. You don't get to control someone's emotional response to being called that bee in front of the world. Of course, I wanted to like the song. I wanted to believe that Kanye, when he told me that I would love the song. I wanted to have a friendly relationship. He promised to play the song for me, but never did. While I wanted to be supportive of Kanye on the phone call, cannot approve a song you haven't heard. I would like to be excluded from this narrative, one I've never asked to be part of since 2009.
It's hard to believe I'm about to say this, but I believe Taylor Swift is the grown-up.
Just the whole thing is so ridiculous, isn't it?
It really is.
This is, again...
Well, there's really no other problems in the world other than this.
It's like a bunch of high schoolers.
What's going on with Bono in France again?
Turns out that he was just a few blocks away from all the mayhem that took place.
Good
where,
Lord.
Where the 80 people were killed.
In Nice.
In Nice, France, for the Bastille Day celebration. He's apparently right down the street at a street-side cafe. You know, they're celebrating Bastille Day. Mayhem begins. People start running and screaming. The owner takes all of the people, including Bono, orders them into the restaurant, locks the door, shutters the restaurant, gets everybody in the basement where they stayed in the basement for a half an hour until police were clearing the area and came. And everybody in the restaurant, including Bono, ordered to come out of the restaurant with their hands on top of their heads until police, you know, cleared and made sure that everybody there was indeed supposed to be there and, you know, no wrongdoing going on. But Bono was also like a mile or so away from the ISIS attack at that concert arena in Paris.
Right, where, and then they played their concert tour stop back there.
Right, but this is now the second time that Bono has been fairly close proximity to these horrible things that have been going
France
on in France.
To keep Bono out of France. But yeah, it's awful. This is awful.
Horrible.
Pitbull is on the WGN Walk of Fame. I don't understand this.
Apparently he did overnight news for...
for Steve and Johnny?
For Steve and Johnny many years ago.
Steve and Johnny and Pitbull?
He was a big fan of Les Paul, it turns out.
Right. I totally understand that.
I think that's how he got on the Walk of Fame. Coincidentally, he also got on the Hollywood Walk of Fame over the weekend as well. So,
do I understand that process right? For instance, if I wanted to nominate you for the Walk of Fame, I would pay
which you should
$3,000 or $4,000 or whatever.
Correct.
And then I agree to pay the monthly upkeep, whatever that shakedown is. And then there's a committee that agrees that you're worthy or not worthy of a star.
That's exactly what it takes.
Yeah, okay.
It's no coincidence that everybody who gets a star gets their star a couple of days before some new project is coming out. So so it's a good publicity thing. Pitbull has a new album that's going to be coming out next week.
Yeah.
Just a coincidence.
Can anybody get a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame?
Well, you have to go through the process. You got to pay for, first of all, there's that fee. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of about $5,000.
Oh, it's $5,000.
It's somewhere like that. It's somewhere in that neighborhood. It's not that expensive, really. I mean,
no. And then you pay the monthly upkeep, like I said.
Yeah.
Rick Dees is out there, so why shouldn't I be out there with you?
Really, no kidding. There are people far less famous than Rick Dees or you and I.
We can do a GoFundMe to get you guys a...
No, we can afford it. We just, I'm sure the committee will approve it. Celebs at the convention tonight include who?
My favorite, Chachi from Joni Loves Chachi.
Scott Baio, man.
Scott Baio is going to speak at the convention tonight.
If you're wondering if Donald Trump had a goofy campaign going, here's your answer.
He is apparently was personally invited by Donald Trump to come and speak at the convention. Get me somebody famous. I want somebody famous to, you know, these showbiz types. Get me somebody. He bumps into Scott Baio and says, you know, well, you want to come and speak at the convention. But Baio is, I didn't know this until I started reading about it, he's a pretty vocal, extremely staunchly conservative figure.
And a 9/11 conspiracy theorist, too. One of these guys that believes the government may have done it.
Yeah, so he's going to be there tonight. After the convention, probably the biggest news, Jon Stewart's going to be back on television. He's going to be with Stephen Colbert. A lot of the shows, they are going to be live from Cleveland, as it turns out, tonight. But a lot of the late-night shows are either being taped in Cleveland or, you know, we'll have some flavor from all of that. So it's going to be a good week for comedy. Next couple of weeks are going to be pretty good weeks for late night comedy.
And before we run out of time, I'll remind you that Dean talked to all the Star Trek cast. He can't review it, but he said he liked it. Including Zachary Quinto. Sorry,
he's the new Spock. He's the the new Spock in this now the third movie. And part of this movie is a lovely, beautiful tribute to the passing of Leonard Nimoy as the original Spock character. It's an integral part of Zachary Quinto's character as the new Spock. One of the many lovely things in this movie. It's a little bit hard to watch the movie. With the death of Anton Yelchin, the young actor who passed away, he's got a significant role in this. The first gay character is revealed in this movie, but it's extremely exciting, visually impressive.
Well, and I firmly believe there have been gay characters in space forever. I don't think this is this is the first time.
You don't run around in an outfit like that and not...
No, not unless you're comfortable.
Look at Space Jam.
And a new Han Solo. Dean has information on that on Channel 9 this morning. By the way, I don't want to ruin it, but it's Wilford Brimley. So I'll...
and the highlight of the morning, root beer bloats Steve.
Root beer bloats me.
By the way, Dean, we figured out in Fanta, a grape Fanta, 300 calories, and what did I say, 82 grams
of sugar, which is like 2.5 times what a grown man should have in a day.
I don't care. Yeah. I had like 64 ounces during the, I drank like a gallon of it during the Star Trek movie.
I quit having root beer popsicles when I had one, and then Entertainment Weekly reported I was pregnant, because I had that little pooch.
You're bloating. Steve's got a baby bump.
See ya. Coming back with the big story next on 720 WGN.
GN.
Here's a mini list of what's banned from the convention site in Cleveland. You can't bring this stuff in. Tennis balls, amps, umbrellas, padlocks, sleeping bags, gas masks, holiday ornaments, ceramics, bicycle locks, tents, coolers, lasers, canned good shovels, light bulbs, aerosol cans, ropes longer than 6 feet, non-plastic containers, ice chest mattresses, BB guns, paintball guns, water guns, and Rokan, all banned from the convention center.
Hey, that's unfair. By the way, with the exception of light bulbs, I was packing all of that in my bag on the way in through security earlier today.
You know what strikes me as the oddest one is the holiday ornaments.
Right?
Well, you know, there's a religious element to the Republican show, you know.
How's Cleveland, Ro?
I brought a menorah, by the way. I don't know if that's going to work for anybody here. Cleveland is, thank you for asking, Steve and Andre. And Andre, you're going to love it here. It's 110% humidity and 300% ridiculous. There is, it's very interesting. I mean, I have seen more security and first responder people on the streets this morning walking around than I've seen civilians. So it's
the perimeter works, but the security is guarding each other.
Well, it's interesting. They said, last night I heard 4,000. There's 4,000 law enforcement personnel here, federal law enforcement personnel here.
4,000. That's good, though.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely feels secure. I mean, it feels like an encampment, but it feels. They have this crazy rally that nutty Roger Stone is throwing a rally.
Boy, he is nuts. I mean, nuts to the point that somebody should just break his jaw.
Don't call for violence while I'm sitting here, Steve.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm going to be taken away.
So
he's throwing a rally today, and you know they have an open carry law in Ohio. You can carry your not beer. Although maybe that too, but you can openly carry your weapon here, your gun.
So if you legally own a gun, you can walk around Kmart or Walmart or any mart,
anywhere, walk around the streets here with your gun. And one of the things about this rally that Roger Stone was putting together, with the exception of the fact that there was a white supremacist group that was one of the sponsors of it, who's now been asked not to be the sponsor of it, and they said that they will respectfully not show up because they don't want to embarrass Donald Trump publicly.
Brought to you by the Klan.
Right. Oh, God. It was so funny because last night, Jeff, my producer and I were sitting at dinner, and the table next to us were, I think, South Carolinians. And they were upset about the number of, like, Klan kind of things going on. These were like, you know, I don't know, they seem to be political types of some sort. And they're like, nah, I'll tell you, until he gets rid of that Klan situation, we're going to have a problem out here. And I'm like, it's funny to hear that in that accent. It's like,
right,
yeah.
When Boss Hogg says we're way too out there, that's an issue.
I think this Trump might just have the wrong people around him. So, so this rally is going to happen somewhere around noon, 1 o'clock, and the convention itself starts at one. Right?
Okay.
They actually seat the delegates at one, and we're being told to expect some maneuvering around 1:30 today.
Maneuvering as in Trump getting in and out, or
no maneuvering? Some political maneuvering.
Oh,
and the Ted Cruz delegates might be doing something kind of wacky today. So we've been just made aware of that. So we'll just
well,
watch
what are
for
you? But we talked to Pat Brady's there as well, and we talked to Pat last hour. And because of the Rules Committee's inaction last week, it doesn't appear the delegates can be freed up to vote for who they want to vote for. So what else can they do?
They could walk out.
Oh, the big walkout. Yeah. So, yeah, because you can't get to 12:37 if all the delegates walk out.
They could walk out. It doesn't mean they don't. I mean, that's the thing. That's what Reagan did in 76.
Right.
There is, we've been told that there's the potential for that today. Now, I don't know if it actually will happen, or there's been some sort of a, if we know about it, the Trump people must know about it, so... So I don't know how much work there is.
But anyway, what about the big unifying of bringing in America's unification general Mike Pence from Indiana? I gotta believe the whole town of Cleveland's buzzing about the Mike Pence pick.
Oh sure. So back to the rally. do you think they're running those Indiana State That Works commercials here in Ohio? I don't know if they're doing that. They'll have to listen.
The most exciting thing about the Pence pick over the weekend was the controversy over the logo, where the P in Pence looked like it was having sex with a T in Trump.
Yeah. Yeah. They were even the Fox News people that I talked to last night were having some fun with that. It's a pretty interesting the sense I get here, Steve, is that people are not taking this man as seriously as he deserves to be taken as the presumptive nominee. And this rally. So back to the rally, because this is important. What's going to happen here is you've got a rally, and then you've got apparently a Black Panthers rally that is also going to take place. They are going to be about a half mile away from each other. But then the question is, will there be a clash? And again, with this open carry situation, they've been asking. Now, Roger Stone has asked the people attending the pro-Trump rally not to bring their weapons.
Oh, I'm sure that'll take care of it.
Yeah. So, and that would be good. I would, you know, I myself am going to be in a bulletproof, bombproof cage at that point somewhere. I brought that with me. They didn't say I couldn't bring that in.
No, but stick around a second, because I have a serious question to ask you. And this goes for Andre being there and Anna as well. And that question is, are you concerned something bad might happen? Stick around. More of the Rogue Con in just a second. Back to Rogue Con live in Cleveland. You know, the plan was to have the whole show there, right? And I feel badly now that, at least for a second or two, that I'm not going.
That you're ditching me?
But here's the deal. And, Ro, you know this. Everything that happens after 10 o'clock in the morning, except for the stuff on the streets. All the morning shows, the TV morning shows are there. They're in remote locations. So you would be out there running around doing stuff anyway. This is me rationalizing. You would be out there running around doing stuff anyway. So I'd just be sitting in an empty convention hall. So I don't think it's different with Ro, because Ro's there in the middle of the action from 3 to 7.
That's true.
How's that for rationalization,
Ro?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, okay. We'll go with that. You know what? Actually, you are right. I mean, there isn't in the mornings, there isn't really anything, and everybody just has to have a presence, right? I mean, that's why MSNBC or NBC, they take an entire street like they did in Des Moines, Iowa.
Yeah.
You know, and they've got a festival kind of setting around them, and Fox has a hotel that they're in, and everybody kind of has their own.
Fox has the deal. Roger Ailes sexual harassment booth where you can go by as a woman.
It's a kissing booth.
Come on, I'm not going there.
All right, serious question now. Anna and Andre are arriving on Wednesday. Obviously the nightmares that have gone on around the country. What's your level of comfort as far as something bad happening goes?
I'm not personally worried about it because you can't be, right? I mean, it could happen at any point, any time, and we've seen that obviously over the last number of months, unfortunately, in America and around the world. So you can't really worry about it. I cannot imagine a more prepared circumstance for trying to deter or certainly taking care of the aftermath. I mean, these people are very, very, there's a lot, as I pointed out, 4,000 federal agents here. That doesn't count the thousands of local and state officials who are, the police and sheriff's officers and all that who are here. So, I don't know that their eyes are out right now, and they are, and they seem to understand exactly what the logistics are. Getting around here, the cutoffs of streets and of the convention center, and then of the Quicken, the Q as they call it, the Quicken Loans Arena, where this is taking place, you can't get within a quarter mile of any of these places without having to pass through Secret Service. And what is interesting to me, and I've covered a number of conventions over the years and other political events, we all had to get Secret Service credentials,
right,
to be here. And those credentials are for here and for Philadelphia. And that, the Secret Service has vetted us, and, we're extreme vetting, as Donald Trump would call it.
Right.
And so you can't move in the city without being able to show that.
As far as being scared, I'm kind of with Ro. There's always an element of that, but I mean,
can happen anywhere.
I'm out every weekend covering stories for TV. We're in all different kinds of neighborhoods covering all different kinds of shootings. You have to be vigilant. You have to be aware. Someone actually asked if we were bringing bulletproof vests.
Yeah, they won't let you do that.
Yeah. That would be a no.
If you're seen in a bulletproof vest, they assume that you are up to no good.
I was actually watching some of the Twitter feeds and some of the Facebook feeds of different people and from different cities coming to cover it saying, we have our bulletproof vests, we have our helmets, we have this, we have this. I thought, they're not going to let you bring that in.
No.
Come on. Can't even bring in a Christmas ornament.
You'd be lucky if you get to Columbus. All right, so quick plug for this afternoon. What do you want to mention?
Well, watch for what's going to happen here. I mean, right before we go on the air, we've got two different things happening that are significant. As I mentioned, we have these external rallies, and whether or not those actually stay calm, that's going to be the first thing. And then once the action starts on the floor here in Cleveland, will there be some form of a protest by the Cruz people? So we'll be watching all that. And obviously, we're going to have we're up near all of the television network television booths, so we'll be talking to a bunch of those people as well.
And actually, the confusing thing is Ted Cruz's delegates are just taking a bus trip to Six Flags Sandusky, so that's really what's happening.
It's lovely, by the way.
Blown out of proportion.
The ball itself has its own energy, or life force, if you will. Its natural environment is in the hole. So why don't you send him home? His bags are packed. He's got his airplane tickets. Bring him to the airport. Send him home.
Send him home. I just send him home. Time to go home there, ball.
Oh, son of a ball, why didn't you just go home? That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
That was Phil Mickelson yesterday on the Eagle that lived down. It's the Steve Cochran Show live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, 9:13 in the morning, and we are excited about the UL Crown, ulcrown.com for tickets and information. Coming to the beautiful Merritt Club. Keith Williams is president and CEO of United Laboratories. Let me turn your microphone on here. That might help both of you. And Craig Kanzer Greg's an old pal, and he's more than excited about sitting next to Dave Ennett, who he listened to as a small toddler.
Okay. I didn't hear the words small toddler you, Steve.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It is a thrill, actually, to be with you guys. We're glad to be here, aren't we, Keith?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely delighted. And it's going to be a fantastic sports week in Chicago.
All right. So let's get local here real fast. Tell me about the USA and the American team in this event.
Well, they're playing pretty well right now. Jarena Pillar might be playing the best out of anybody on the team.
She's a rock star, man.
She has become a rock star without winning a tournament yet, yeah. Which is amazing. But she could win the crown this week. So Jarena Pillar, Stacey Lewis. Stacey had a pretty good week in Toledo. And then you got Lexi Thompson, of course, and
who's
Christy
here?
Kerr.
Yeah. Lexi Thompson's Lexi, here.
We brought
she's
Lexi
very
Thompson.
Very quiet, but she's here.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we bring up those poster-sized images all over the place. We've been carrying it around town. So... I think the United States, while not the overall favorite because they are the second seed, top seed in Pool B, they have a good chance. Remember, they didn't even make it to Sunday the last time. They are motivated.
That's right. Last 2 years ago, you had Spain winning and Sweden second. Yep. So even Korea struggling.
And speaking of Korea, the Korean women have dominated the tour now for years. Who are fans going to really look forward to seeing?
Se-young Kim's a really good player. What's interesting is Inbee Park's been injured for a while, and she's been the number one player for off and on for a couple of years now, battling with Lydia Ko and Stacey Lewis. And she's not playing because of injury, and So-yeon Yoo is now on the team. And So-yeon Yoo is a U.S. Women's Open past champion, also a top 10 player in the world, who had to get in as an alternate to fill the four spots. That is the toughest team to make in all of professional sports, I believe. Team Korea is just loaded with talent. Amy Yang's on that team. She made 9 birdies in a row in Korea at our event there a couple of weeks ago. Video games are great.
Right. And explain to folks why Korean women's golf in particular blew up in the last few years.
Well, you could go all the way back to Sari Pak winning the U.S. Women's
Open.
Well,
that's the one, right?
That's the one that paved the way for everybody in Korea to come over and play and be
stars.
But
then all these facilities pop up then?
They do, but they can't even get on golf courses. Keith knows this. They have ranges that are just packed from the start of the day to the end of the day in darkness.
Right.
It's amazing. And they're very polite. The culture over there is phenomenal. We have the event over there with the LPGA, which, by the way, we play in 15 different countries. We've got players that represent more than 32 countries on our tour each and every week, and we're televised in 170 countries each week on our tour. So we're basically like the Olympics each and every week. We just don't have a gold medal podium, a silver medal podium, and a bronze medal podium, and that's probably why UL wanted to get in on this thing. Isn't that right?
And I got to tell you, Keith, I think the level of athletes on the tour has never been better. So if you want to see, we talked about this, Craig, last time you were on. No matter what kind of golfer you are, you want to get a tempo fixed. The human metronome is the LPGA player. Metronome, it's different than a dome, is the LPGA player because you can watch that swing, and it's an amazing amount of power that gets generated. But they're great athletes. It's great entertainment, and I assume that's why you all wanted to be involved.
Well, yes, exactly. That's right. And I used to live in Minneapolis, so I do know the difference between a metrodome and a metronome.
Yeah, but same here.
And my wife's a professional singer, so I've learned that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, first of all, these ladies are absolutely unbelievable athletes. Secondly, it's a game that a lot of us who play golf can relate to a little bit more than the PGA Tour. The distances they hit the ball are more similar to what we do.
Except when they hit green after green after green and they make putts. That's where it ends for us.
I think you do that as well, right?
Yeah, sure do. Then I wake up and I go play golf.
That's what I heard. Yeah. I think the other thing is these women who play on the LPGA are the most approachable, amazing professional athletes in the world. And that's a great reason for fans to come out this week and watch UL International Crown. The interaction with the people on the LPGA is a very special, unique experience.
I completely agree. I've been to a Solheim Cup as well. There's nothing like watching team play because golf is such an individual sport. But seeing the girls come together and play for the team, that spirit and that camaraderie, it's second to none.
And with this event, what the fans are going to see, and we all know Chicago's got great golf fans. I grew up here going to the Western Open at Butler National and then out at Cog Hill, and the fans here are just super. They're going to see pageantry. They're going to see passion. They're going to see energy. They're going to have faces painted. We're going to play national anthems from all the eight countries on Thursday morning on the first tee.
Jim Cornelison has to sing all of them. He's struggling with Korea.
He is. He's working on that. We're going to try to bring him in some help. But that's the beauty of it. You know, this competition has grown so much in 2 years, sure. Partly because of UL taking it to a whole nother level. But the other thing is the players now, as you can imagine, are very well aware of trying to make the team for their country. Right. I mean, I've had players come up to me, I really want to get there. I want to be on that Australia team, and then don't make it, and they're upset. China was trying to figure out if they were going to get in. Don't go up to Atha Munoz, who's on Spain, and one was Spain the last go-around. They didn't even qualify this time. Shouldn't want to talk about it at all that they didn't get in. So I think everybody is seeing some momentum with this event, and we're going to Korea in 2018, so it's going to be spectacular.
And both of you can address this. The Merit Club is a choice of venue here. We're lucky enough to play that course quite a bit. But it's Bragger. Great. It's a great. We sneak on.
Oh,
it's a great venue with a lot of natural stadium settings on holes, and for fans that want to come out, there's you can see a lot of holes from certain points on that course.
It's a fantastic course. Have you played it?
I have played it, and I totally agree with you. It's a fantastic place to watch golf. It's going to be a great test of golf for the players in match play. The routing, as you may know, is a little bit different so that we can have more of the finishing holes around the clubhouse and make it easier for spectators as well. I think it's going to be fantastic. And, of course, it was a former Open Championship site.
That's right. U.S. Women's Open. Kari Webb. Christy Kerr was right there in second place, and she's in the field as well this week.
Kari Webb was in here not long ago.
That's right.
She's in the field as well. More with you guys in just a second. Quick break. We'll come back and talk more about the UL Crown. Again, go to ulcrown.com.
No, you don't have to. You actually don't have to because, see, I brought you guys some stuff.
Oh, ooh. We don't have to.
See?
Oh, okay.
I mean, we can give tickets away live on the air if you wanted to right now. I'm not telling you how to do your show.
I
mean, Dave can tell us.
And I don't blame him.
He wants to do it.
Someone should.
Greg.
Here you go, Dave. There's two.
Excellent. Thank you.
How about this? We give away two pair of tickets as long as you agree to buy four more to callers 7 and 8 now. 312-981-7200 is that telephone number. ULCrown.com. Back with more in a moment. 920 on 720 WGN. .924 I have a lot of respect for corporate CEOs and muckety mucks like my friend Keith here, who get behind major sports and support major sports because of the community involvement, the community benefit to that, bringing communities together. But it's a big undertaking for UL, so thank you for doing it.
Oh, it's our pleasure. We're really looking forward to the event.
UL International Crown this weekend, this week, I should say, at Merit. Craig Kand is here as well, Chief Communications Officer at the LPGA. Craig, of course, on Golf Channel for years until the incident.
Doesn't everybody have one?
Yeah, we all do.
Yeah,
you're the best.
Some are more publicized.
By the way, who's the best player? Not previous tour guys, of guys that are broadcasters at the Golf Channel. Who's the best player?
Rich Lerner's a pretty good player.
Is he?
He is. Boy, we had a lot of lousy players. Van Pelt was horrible. He really was. No, he was. I mean, he'd be the first guy to tell you. Steve Sand's not that great a player.
Yeah,
Lerner's a pretty good player.
If we could just get Rich Lerner to talk. Last time around, I asked him a question, and Tom Skilling came in and said, that guy's got to stop talking. It's the UL International Crown. Again, the website is ulcrown.com. Let me ask you a question, Craig, because we know there's great golf going on the LPGA Tour. Mm-hmm. But there is this continued question of folks going, when so many of the stars are Korean stars, and you want to get young girls involved, not just in America, but around the world. Is there an identity problem, or has that been trumped up?
No, I don't think there's an identity problem at all. I think I think what we're seeing in sports in general, I mean, go to every sport, first of all, and try to find a league that's not going global.
Right.
The NFL's going global. The NBA goes and plays overseas. Baseball's got their event outside the United States. That's just the way we're going right now. And as Keith would attest, there are partners of the LPGA and other sports that want to partner and do business in the United States that are perhaps Asian companies, and there are businesses in the United States that want to do business in Asia. But for young kids, I mean, look, Tiger Woods did a lot of great things for the game of golf. What I think he did most of all is that he grew the game by creating this desire for young kids in every country to want to be the next Tiger Woods.
No, exactly right. And isn't it so American that we would have this discussion, right? Because when Tiger Woods was the king of the hill,
yep.
there were Japanese kids who got up every morning and wanted to be Tiger Woods.
Right.
So why can't there be little girls in this country who want to follow the Korean stars on tour right now?
On the LPGA, one of our biggest missions is to grow the game for young girls.
Right.
We've gone from 10,000 girls a year through the LPGA USGA Girls Golf Program 5 years ago to 50,000 girls introduced to the game each year right now. That's a big initiative for us, and we're going to keep trying to push. We got to find ways to get people into the game, but we also have to find ways to keep people in the game that are already playing because of other things. That's as big a challenge as anything else that we have out there.
It's a great point. And as far as UL's involvement in this goes, you guys start this a long time before the tournament starts, right?
Oh, we do. We started this really right after Kays Valley 2 years ago, and we're already thinking about Korea. I really think, though, what Craig said is important, is that everybody in the world wants to have a global league for whatever their sport is. LPGA seems to have gotten there soonest. I lived 11 years in Asia, and I can tell you every Saturday, Sunday morning when you go play golf somewhere, what you'll see on the television is the LPGA. And
makes total sense, right?
There is. And just as Sayre Park inspired young girls in Korea, Shan Shan Feng will inspire young girls in China. The Jutanyagarn sisters are inspiring young golfers in Thailand, Yannick Tseng in Taiwan. I think it's absolutely fantastic, and the global competition makes it a much better game.
A very unfair conversation to me is that the Korean-born players don't Americanize, or they don't speak the English language. We have some players on our tour that speak better English than I do that are born in Korea. And they work hard at it. You know, when I go over to Korea, I can't speak their language.
Sure.
Why do we expect them to be so great so quickly and say, oh, they can't do this, they can't do that? They love being a part of the LPGA. And I don't care whether it's from China. Shan Shan Feng speaks phenomenal English, and she is one of our best ambassadors. So Young Yu, I think you're playing with her in the Pro-Am this week. She's unbelievable. Yanni Sen has carried the crown around this whole town doing a publicity tour.
Cool.
So they are some of our best ambassadors,
and they've
stepped up. It's super proud. You know, one thing I just want to add before we go, we had to do a second run on media credentials the other day.
Oh, great as
in this town. Yeah. So that's one of the best things
tremendous.
That's happened about this event for us in 2 years' time.
I think it's great, too, that young girls are getting involved. I volunteered last year at a girls' golf clinic. LPGA-sponsored Lumel Nadies was out there, too. But the girls were as young as 6 to 12. And one of the misperceptions was one of the moms said, oh, it's so expensive,
mm-hmm.
but didn't realize, you know, you can rent clubs. Mm-hmm. You can get a starter set. You can be fitted. So because a lot of women use men's clubs, and they're too big for them. But I think it's great, the initiative to get girls, especially younger girls,
I agree.
involved in the sport.
Yeah, and I don't think cost is a barrier as much as interest and distraction and other things.
Exactly.
And keeping them active and getting them out there, it's great.
17 and under in free all week this week. And on Saturday, Big Kids Day. A lot of stuff going on. Great opportunities for all of them to take part. You know.
Last question from your mentor, a guy that you listened to as a toddler, yeah. Dave Ennett.
Okay, he never said toddler. The crowds, when you were in Baltimore 2 years ago, what were the crowds like? Because international competition, they tend to be more boisterous. Do you expect that this week?
I hope we get that this week. I mean, we're saying bring the noise. We built the kind of the setting around the first tee to have those anthems played. We're going to have walk-up songs for each country when they come up to the first tee.
Oh, that's very
they get
cool.
To pick, they get to pick
that's
their
very
own.
Cool.
We try to do, you know what, we try to be different. We are not trying to do the cookie cutter what everybody else does. This was not supposed to be the United States against the rest of the world. This wasn't supposed to be the United States against Asia. This is every country for themselves, qualify, take the best players. Hey, guess what? Brooke Henderson's not in this because Canada's not good enough yet across the board. Neither is New Zealand, and Lydia Ko's not in the event. But I guarantee you, in 6-8 years' time, they will grow the sport in their country, and this event will grow and become one of the best events, not just on the LPGA Tour, because it already is, but in golf in general.
The UL International Crown. Glad to have you guys in town. At the Merritt Club in Gurnee. Andrea just stole the crown.
No,
and,
I didn't. Steal
I don't know.
Crown.
There's a major crime
this
happening
is gorgeous.
In your studio.
This is Tiffany, by the way.
UL, yes, I know.
Yes, it
of
is.
Course, I know. It actually fits my ring finger. ULCrown.com. Thank you again to UL, and thank you to Keith Williams, and thank you to Craig Ken. Nice to see you guys.
Thank you
Great
very
to
much.
Be
Thanks
here.
For being here.
Really appreciate what you guys have done for us.
Back with a big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
942, show number 693 continues. Sandberg, who's on the show tomorrow?
Gary McCarthy.
former police superintendent Gary McCarthy, whose last interview before he was fired was on the show.
That's right.
I was suggesting that Mike Jacobson do a rejoin with that, but I'm not sure that that's nice. Pretty much.
Well, let's see how it goes. And?
Well, Bill Curtis, and he goes right into Governors Johnson and Weld.
What's Curtis doing on the show?
He's going to talk about some stuff.
A lot of people think I know what's going on the show since it's called the Steve Cochran Show. I do, just not right now. Governors Johnson and Weld are your Libertarian candidates, and I'm very excited they're going to be in studio. Wanted to talk to these guys. I'm not quite sure why they've put themselves in the witness protection program since they're running for president, but they're here in town to do some media, and they're going to be in on the show, which is good. Johnson over the weekend got to 13%. There's this mythical number that you have to hit to get into the debates, and I believe it's 16%. He's at 13. You have to get Johnson to 16% in popularity in the national polling, and I believe it's an average of polls, to get into the debates. Wouldn't you like to hear a third viewpoint other than Trump and Hillary once the debates start?
I would like to hear their viewpoint, and it'll be nice to hear it because I haven't heard a lot from them, which is, this will be good.
So that'll be tomorrow.
I know, in studio for like two segments. So
good. Yeah. Well, we'll keep them longer. Thank you. It's 9:43, and Mark DiCarlo joins us live from Los Angeles. He was originally scheduled to be in Cleveland, and apparently the authorities caught up to that idea and told you no?
That's what they said, Steve, and I'm more than happy to comply with the authorities, but as you know, I'm paying strict attention to what's been going on, and I think I've noticed some interesting turn of events.
Before we get to that turn of events, are you giddy with excitement about Governor Mike Pence's nomination as vice president?
It's like the heavens open up, and he was brought down from on high to help America, and I think that's amazing.
All right, so what are you noticing live from Los Angeles? Because I believe you can get perspective the farther you get away from this.
Exactly. I was trying to catch a plane to Tonga so I could really get the big picture, but I was unable to do that. But everyone has been talking about the pivot for Mr. Trump. The bulldog tactics from the primaries, giving way to a more senatorial and collegial atmosphere for the general election. I think I've seen two amazing evidences of Trump making that pivot just in the last 48 hours.
Things that appear more presidential.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. All right, what were those two things?
Well, first of all, I don't know if you saw the footage from his press conference last night before he left for Cleveland, but the lawn jockeys at Trump Tower, the hue of the skin is now a more brown.
All right, so he's blending. He's blending and becoming more presidential by lightening the skin tone of his lawn jockeys.
Yes. If you go back and look at a cut from like last week out in front, the skin tone on the jockeys is black as night.
Uh-huh.
But last night there was a more brown, a browner, almost golden hue, I think. Again, a color palette suggesting the fall. Subliminally projecting people's minds into the fall, and of course the presidential race will be won.
So less Samuel L. Jackson and more French vanilla iced coffee.
Yes, maybe a little John Leguizamo in there.
Ah, yes. Well, that's interesting. What was the other point you saw?
The hue on his spray tan is more orange. Again, pointing towards the fall. More like a great pumpkin. And I think this is it's a more inclusive color. Of course, everyone knows that orange was Frank Sinatra's favorite color, and he was beloved.
Yeah. Now, somebody said earlier this year, and I thought it was a great quote at the time, that orange is not the new black in regards to his appeal to the black voter. But I guess it was President Obama that actually said it. But you're saying this does put us in a mind of fall, when we'll be voting, and it's almost a hypnotic way to draw us into Trump land.
It is. What it does is it distracts against the, quote, words, end quote, and policies that are flying around. And I think focuses people's limbic system in their brain, the deepest, oldest part of our brain, on just accepting the fact that the fall is coming and that this choice is coming. And I think it's a very sly move, and I think his handlers are really handling the pivot quite well.
Now, he considers himself to be a major celebrity more than a politician. Were there any celebrity names that were mentioned to you in secret, in the secret celebrity communications that you have, that could have been the vice presidential nomination if not for the electric Mike Pence?
There were several, Steve, and the public will never know how close he came to choosing a couple of these other people. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. People that I think would have been a huge, huge surprise.
Anybody you can reveal?
Dick Van Dyke was a name on the list.
I did not know that.
Who doesn't love Dick Van Dyke?
Well, we all love Dick Van Dyke. Mm-hmm. Sure, of course.
Dick turned him down.
He did.
Unfortunately for Mr. Trump.
Well, you can't have two dicks on a turkey. You know, I mean, that's it right there. I mean, that's
I believe
summation.
That's what his press release said, yes. there was another name on the list.
Well, let me ask you. I got a couple here. Tell me if I'm right about these. Was Pat Sajak a consideration?
It wasn't sure. There were a few letters that could have been Pat Sajak on the list that I saw, but it wasn't all filled in.
So the puzzle wasn't complete.
Exactly. There was an A. There were two A's and a bunch and a K. Personally, I think, yes, it was Pat Sajak, but the document that I saw, like, as I said, was not completely filled in.
How about former action hero Steven Seagal?
Steven Seagal was actually a very, very close call there. He had been spending the last couple of weeks at Chris Christie's beach house on the Jersey Shore. Mm-hmm. He was having some problems. He needed a couch to crash on. It's not really important why he was there. But there was a kind of background infighting between Christie and Steven Seagal, and I think that kind of tension soured Trump on either of them and bumped them both off the ticket, actually.
And this one surprised me. The last one on my list from right out of Mayberry, Aunt Bee. Aunt Bee, Bee Benaderet, was that her name? Aunt Bee was supposed to be on the list. Is that true or not true? Because, God, I mean, I thought she'd been dead for years.
She has been dead for years, but that did not keep her off the list. Trump insisted that he could reanimate her with the power of his personality.
Sure, of course.
I believe they tried that and were arrested for raiding a grave, but that didn't happen, and it just kind of it went away. It would have been a great choice, though, because it balances the ticket. You've got a woman who knows how to bake.
Sure.
And you pair that with Trump. I think it's a pretty powerful ticket.
It really is.
Even though she died in the 80s, you guys know.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. That was the big, from what I understand from my sources, and obviously I can't reveal them, that was the big bugaboo, is that she is dead.
All right, so can we check back in with you later this week? Because we feel like your perspective from as far away as L.A. is as good as anybody's.
I really feel like I have my finger on the pulse, Steve, from here. I think if I was actually in Cleveland, you're almost too close to it.
Yeah.
And you get the information fresh as it's happening. I think my insights are much more valuable this far away, being filtered through things that other people say.
And I would love to hear from many of your celebrity friends what they think of this before we get to Philadelphia next week. That's the great Mark DiCarlo. You can get Mark for your birthday parties, your bar mitzvahs, your circumcisions. I do most of his booking. It's 9:51. Bill and Wendy coming up at 10. This is 720 WGN. Steve Cochran Show continues. Before we wrap up, again, just a word on the insanity of policemen being shot all over the country. If you get an opportunity to thank a cop today, I'd do it. If you get an opportunity as a white person to reach out and shake the hand of a black person who you would normally not even speak with, or if you get an opportunity as a black person to reach out and shake the hand of a white person who you ordinarily might not speak with, these sort of small ways of breaking down walls, I think, are a big damn deal. Here's President Obama from the weekend talking about attacks on police and the hideousness of the whole affair.
Regardless of motive, the death of these three brave officers underscores the danger that police across the country confront every single day. And we as a nation have to be loud and clear that nothing justifies violence against law enforcement. Attacks on police are an attack on all of us and the rule of law that makes society possible.
The words are great. I'd like to hear anger. I would like to hear anger from the president at this point. I would like to hear legitimate, vehement anger from the president that this is going on in the country that you run as president of the United States. That's all. The East Baton Rouge sheriff is a man named Sid Gautreaux. I thought he summed up in a press conference nicely what the cops have to be going through there.
To me, this is not so much about gun control as it is about what's in men's hearts. And until we come together as a nation as a people, to heal as a people. If we don't do that, and this madness continues, we will surely perish as a people.
The governor of Louisiana spoke out as well. His name is John Bel Edwards. He talked about what we are now, and what we're supposed to be. Here's that clip.
And again, ask everyone to join with the folks of Louisiana in solidarity so that as a nation, we can heal, we can get past this, and we can be what we're supposed to be in the United States of America, because we're not there today.
And lastly, Alton Sterling Zant. This is the guy that was killed in Baton Rouge. Alton Sterling Zant was just devastated by what happened in Baton Rouge. Again, this is a guy that came from Kansas City, an ex-Marine. This is something we haven't even talked about. The men and women that we send home from combat who have PTSD and other issues, we've got to have a better way of exit interviewing and vetting them as they come home and giving them the services they need to avoid falling off the cliff and falling off the deep end. No excuses. No excuses for anything that's happened. But these last two shooters have been ex-Marines. That should be a wake-up call at the Pentagon that we better start looking at who we're sending home and what mental shape they're in.
Dallas and Baton Rouge are the two.
Dallas and Baton Rouge, yeah. Alton Sterling's aunt, this is the aunt of the guy in Baton Rouge that was killed. Listen.
We don't call for no bloodshed. That's how this all started, with bloodshed. We don't want no more bloodshed. So if you're not on a call with us, leave. Go home. Go wherever you come from. This is our house. You can't come in our house killing us. That's what you're doing, because at the end of the day, when these people call these families, they tell them that their daddies and their mama's not coming home no more. I know how they feel, because I got the same phone call. No justice. No justice. No peace. That's what we're calling for. Stop this killing. Stop this killing. Stop this killing.
God bless her, you know, for speaking out. And I'll say what I said at the top of the show. A cop standing in front of two people, one spitting on him and mother effing him, and the other is reaching out to shake his hand, is sworn to protect both of them equally. And that's what cops do when they go to work every day. It's a couple of minutes before 10. Bill and Wendy next.